You know, when I prepare a homily, I do a quick search on the internet to kind of see if there's any discussion on the topic. It helps me narrow down my thoughts, and I hope to get my mind going. And as I was reflecting on the readings, a theme came up that was about doubting. And I thought of the phrase, sowing the seeds of doubt. That's what we see is happening by the devil. He's sowing seeds in there. And I plugged it into the Google, and the page came out. And it was at changingminds.org. And the whole website was about teaching people to sow seeds of doubt and manipulate them into thinking the same way you want them to think. So it says that if the other person seems sure, you need to find ways where he could be a little bit wrong. And then you widen the gap so that he's less and less sure of himself. Then it says that if they doubt you when what you're telling them, then doubt their doubt, it says. It goes on, shows you how to do that. It says that you do not know that how they think they are saying, and tell them that all kinds of other people agree with you. You know, or agree with me if you're trying to convince them. So it also says that few people know everything, and if you can find an area where they're less sure, then you can turn a little doubt into a lot of uncertainty, even to the point when they can completely change their mind. And it says another way to create doubt is to do it through other people. The plan is to get other people to say that they are not convinced about what that person is saying. And so the weight of kind of social doubt, when a lot of people don't believe you anymore, that helps persuade the person that something must be wrong with me then. So this website offered techniques to get people to change their minds in the way you want them to think. So as I was reading it, it felt a little scary because it made no reference to the truth, no reference to the common good or the right or helping the people. You know, no reference to how can I instill goodness and life in them. It was all about getting people to change their mind so that they'll think the way you want them to think. And it begins by creating doubt in what you think. And really, it was teaching how people to manipulate them. So if you look at today's reading, you could see that this is nothing new. You know, crafty people have been working this way since the beginning of time. Like in the first reading, the devil causes Eve to doubt what God is saying. But you notice that God says you can eat of all of the trees of this garden, but don't eat of this fruit of the tree of the knowledge of the good and evil and the tree of life in the middle of the garden, because if you do that, you will surely die. But Satan says, did God really tell you that you can't eat any of the fruit? It's like Eve says, yeah, he didn't tell us we couldn't eat any of the fruit. He said, we just can't eat of that fruit. So all of a sudden, the devil's creating doubt in her mind about what God really said. But she knows, because she's pretty certain what God said. Then the serpent starts to work on her by saying, you will not die. God knows that if you eat of it, you will be like him. And he does not want you to be like him. And so he starts sowing the seeds of doubt in the mind of Eve. And so in the gospel, we have the story of the temptation of Jesus in the desert. Right before the story of the temptation, we have the baptism of Jesus. And the Spirit comes in the form of a dove and says, this is my beloved Son. Listen to him. Once he's in the desert and he's weak, the devil starts to tempt Jesus by planting seeds of doubt. If you are the Son of God, then turn these stones into bread. You know, if your Father really cares for you, throw yourself down and see if he helps you. See if he'll protect you. And if your Father can't give you all that I can give you, he doesn't have it all. The devil says, I have it all. And so we have the devil planting the seeds of doubt in his mind. Adam and Eve gave in to the doubt, but of course Jesus does not. And so he reverses that disobedience done by the human being. You know, one characteristic of all temptations that we all have experienced, all of us, I think, is that there's an element of confusing us, especially with right with wrong. You know, phrases like, it really doesn't matter. It's no big deal. You know, it won't hurt anyone. It's not really wrong anyway. It's not that wrong. It's part of convincing and persuading words to tempt us into thinking and believing what others want us to believe, to lure us into something. You know, as we listen to the story of the temptations in the Old Testament and New Testament today, it's easy, you know, to ask ourselves how we are tempted, just like Adam and Eve and Jesus. You know, and they usually think of these pretty big things of like turning away from God and goodness and the Father in heaven. But we can also be tempting others. We can be the tempter. We can do the work of Satan by tempting others and dragging them into the wrong maybe that we're doing. You know, that really is against their judgment. Maybe it might be to convince your spouse to take your side when you know you're wrong. Or maybe, and you know, the telling your children to tell a little white lie. Teach them to tell little white lies for you to make it easier to get out of trouble, maybe with school. Or teaching someone else or showing a person something that now they have to deal with in their life. Now the easy one to think of is something like that would end up being an addiction in the person's life, and it started by someone showing it to another person. But a very small matter, I remember a person telling me a very terrible joke. I mean, it was really a sacrilegious, it was offensive, it was about Jesus, and it was a long, long time ago. And many years later, even today, I still remember that joke. And that comes to mind whenever people are telling jokes. And I think I have to refrain from telling anyone that joke. You know, because I would never want them to have hear that or even laugh at that. And today, I still wish I had never heard that joke. That person who told it to me thinking it was funny. So for today, we believe the only thing that matters oftentimes are the big ones. You know, I don't give into the temptation to be unfaithful. I've never been unfaithful to my wife. You know, I've never killed anybody. I've never robbed or stolen from anybody. But we see that Jesus is dealing in today's gospel with the big ones. And he's like handling it like a pro. I mean, he's the model, but he's got some pretty big temptations to deal with because he's got a very big mission. But as one Christian writer said, the collapse of Christian life is seldom a blowout. It's usually a slow leak over time. We go further and further away. So it starts with no longer believing that God wants nothing more than our happiness. That he really does want what is best for us, for our family life, for our children. And then, but we want to decide for ourselves what we think will make us happy. And then the question we always ask is, so how's it going for you if you're not following the way God has challenged us to? It's giving into the small things, justifying them, and losing that sting, you know, to our conscience that we were a little more sensitive to earlier in our life, maybe. And then so that the bigger things that we probably end up doing are much easier to do now because we've lost the conscience that would stop us a long time ago. May we be watchful for the ones who start to sow seeds of doubt about God, about his love for us, and his desire only for our good, and that we have purpose and meaning in this life. And God has given us a way that leads to a happiness that only God can give. And there'll be lots of other people and lots of other temptations away from that very basic belief. But may we remember, just like Adam and Eve and Jesus, it is true that the evil one will tempt us to believe something different than that.